My name is Iman, and I'm a 14-year-old student in Lahore. It's 7:07 right now, and I'm standing outside. I'm about to go to school, and the air quality is 278. I just got back from school, and I'm standing outside. It's 2:31, and the air quality has decreased to 177, with a little bit of a breeze.
Hi, everyone. That was my colleague's 14-year-old niece reporting live from Lahore on the city's poor air quality throughout the day. If you listen closely, those were some pretty nasty numbers she reported. And clearly, Lahore's air quality is suffering. This has implications far beyond what we can imagine, especially for children as young as 14. But what is behind this and how will this air quality impact us? My name is Tuba Masood and I'm back with another episode of Climate Mahal. In this episode, I have Zoha Siddiqui and Amira Adil with me. Both of these women work within the climate space, and today I've had a chance to discuss the air we breathe with them. Zoha is a reporter with Rest of World, whose latest piece, Riders on the Smog, brought us face-to-face with the smoggy reality in Lahore, Delhi, and Dhaka. With in-depth research and real-life stories, Zoha and her colleagues followed gig workers around these cities to find out how smog impacts them. Rest of World is an American technology nonprofit which covers the intersection of tech and culture, and you guessed it, the rest of the world. Zoha's beat is labor, and she focuses very specifically on the way that technology affects workers and the way we work. Let's listen to Zoha first.
Hi, Zoha. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to tell you that your smog story, like, it was amazing. I mean, not in a good way, but like, I mean, it really brought the smog issue back in my mind, and you know, I'd forgotten about it, to be honest. But how was it reporting on that? Can you walk us through that?
This particular story, I'll just walk you through the process. We started working on this story a couple of months ago, back in November. That's when the idea first sort of crept into our heads. And the reason why we started working on this is because I don't know if you remember, but the local sort of city administration in Lahore had issued a lockdown back. Sort of, you know, end of November because of smog. And the lockdown was basically like a COVID style, you know, all shops will close down at 7 p.m. type of situation. And we just sort of wanted to understand, at that point in time, we wanted to understand how smog was affecting gig workers, how these lockdowns were affecting gig workers. Mm-hmm. We picked up the Lahore sort of story. And then when we looked at where sort of Lahore was ranking in the list of most polluted countries in the world, we realized that South Asia as a region, the fact that smog is a regional problem was glaringly evident in the list of 50 most polluted cities in the world. And this list is sort of compiled by IQAir, which is a Swiss organization that tracks air quality across the world. So that's when the idea sort of crept up. And then we realized that we needed data to back this up, right? This couldn't just be a story comprising of anecdotes. We needed numbers. We needed sort of tangible evidence, so to speak, to show that gig workers were on the front lines of this crisis and were getting impacted. So the way that we went about that was our features director at Rest of World, Vicky, she did some research. We decided to use these sort of small portable air quality monitors manufactured by a company called Atmo. They were shipped from the US to Pakistan, Dhaka in Bangladesh, and New Delhi in India. So three different reporters worked on this project. And the idea was to sort of trail a gig worker during their shift, right? The gig worker would carry the monitor or the device as they went about working. And then we would sort of, you know, look at the findings and see if something, you know, see if there's something interesting that creeps up in the data. And my first takeaway from this, and I'll tell you how we went about reporting. So the way that we went about reporting was Samriddhi, who was our reporter in Delhi, she and I sort of, we worked on the same day, and then Faisal worked a couple of days later. So this was February 8th, I believe. I flew to Lahore the day prior. And then the next morning, I sort of followed Sami Iqbal during the course of his shift. He's a gig worker who multi-apps. He works with different platforms, Bikeya, InDrive, Kareem, Yango, and he's a bike taxi driver. And somebody was working with Manu Sharma, who also multi-apps for Swiggy and Zomato in Delhi. And the first thing we realized, and it's funny in hindsight, but it was actually horrifying, was the fact that the air quality, so the air quality sensors sort of, they rank air quality on a scale of 0 to 100, with 0 being the lowest and 100 being the best, right? So like typically in my room in Karachi, and I have the sensor with me right now, it sort of ranks in the 70s, right? So like 75, 78, which is not a bad score, right? It's like, okay, for most population groups, a little risky for sensitive groups. If you have like a dehumidifier, it is ideal that you use that. In Lahore, Tuba, it was 0 inside my hotel room. It was 0 in the lobby of the hotel room. It was 0. For a while, I thought it wasn't working.
I'm feeling something really bad is going to happen right now. I'm getting really nervous.
Because it wouldn't budge from 0. You know, my hotel room had levels of PM2.5, which is particulate matter that can penetrate inside your lungs, hovering around 170, 160. Yeah. This was inside my hotel room, right? And then we were out on the streets with Sami. Of course, it was hovering between 200 to 300. There's a graph in the story that sort of takes you through minute by minute what sort of levels of particulate matter were. And the WHO's recommendation is that it shouldn't cross 15, right? We were living and breathing in levels of PM2.5 that were, you know, indoors pretty high and then outdoors catastrophic, right? The sensor wouldn't budge because for a while I thought it wasn't working. Somebody in Delhi also thought it wasn't working. We have a WhatsApp group with the three of us reporters and our editor Durga, and we were like, oh, are these monitors not working? And then we realized they were working. And the fact that it was 0 was indicative of how bad the air quality was, right? I was wearing a mask throughout. I have asthma myself. I ended up with a chest infection that required antibiotics. I was You know, when I came back to Karachi, I kid you not, I was like, I was gulping mouthfuls of air. And it's so tragic because this is Karachi and Karachi's air quality isn't great either. But it was so much better than what it was in Lahore. And this was in January when smog wasn't even in the headlines. You know, we were past that.
That's what I thought. So when I read your story, that's what I thought, but smog to ho gaya.
It was no longer sort of in the headlines. It wasn't in the news. You know, we were past that. It was, you know, everything was great, except it wasn't. It was still very much there. That morning, I remember, so Sami lives in this, and this detail is in the story. He lives in this place. He lives in a neighborhood called Golbagh, near a park called Golbagh, and it's in Lahore, sort of old quarters. And when he was on his shift, he passed by, and we were trailing behind him. He sort of, you know, he was on this bridge that is next to the Badshahi Mosque, and the mosque was sort of covered in this sheet of gray. At about 10 in the morning, right? It's certainly not fog because you can feel it. Your chest hurts, your throat hurts, you can feel your lungs on fire. And that was my big takeaway from, and then the other big takeaway from this was actually something so the way that we did our reporting was in December, we spoke with experts. So we spoke with sort of, you know, pulmonologists, doctors in all three cities, air quality scientists and gig workers. So we spoke to a total of 25, 10 in Lahore, 5 in, 6 in Delhi and 9 in Dhaka, right? So we did all our background reporting in December, and something I think this sentence is also in the story. The pulmonologist from Lahore that I spoke with, his name's Dr. Irfan Malik, and he's been doing some really good work on sort of the rise of COPD in Lahore, right? And the fact that sort of hospitals are piling up. I think Reuters did a story where they, was, I think, end of November, beginning January, where they said, you know, hospitals are piling up, children are getting sick, there's like pneumonia everywhere.
Pneumonia everywhere, right?
And so something he said during my call with him is he said, you know, patients come to me and they say, what do we do? We're so sick. And I tell them, move, you know, don't stay here. And then they look at me and they cry and they say, you know, where do we go? And that really, really stayed with me because, you know, where this is something that's going to, unless something is done, this is a problem that is only going to get worse and worse with time. And it's, you know, it's almost like we're waiting for that to happen. That's what really scares me.
So in your opinion, what are some of the causes behind these alarmingly high, bad levels of air quality?
So the causes are layered and it depends from city to city, right? In Dhaka, for instance, one of the reasons why Dhaka sees alarmingly high levels of smog is because there are brick kilns, you know, in the vicinity of the city. Lots of these are illegal. And then, of course, there's very high vehicular traffic. I mean, bad traffic and Dhaka are almost synonymous with each other. Lahore, you know, something a lot of researchers told me when I spoke to them for this piece was that they've seen a rise in sort of people using alternative forms of fuel for domestic cooking, so like biogas or like fuels that release emissions, and so, you know, or wood burning, and that is sort of particularly in the winter months because there's no gas, right? And so that has led to a rise in particulate matter and a rise in pollution, and of course there's vehicular pollution, there's industrial pollution in Lahore and in Delhi. But something I've realized through sort of my months reporting on climate in Pakistan is it's not that laws and legislation don't exist. They do. There are laws and there is legislation that sort of governs industrial emissions, right? Or like that, and there is legislation that states that there should be checks and balances. There should be monitoring of sort of, you know, pollutants that are being released by large factories. It's just that they're not implemented. And there's a really great quote. I don't know if this made it to the story, but you know, I really love the sentence. Abed Umar, who's a really great, he's the founder of the Pakistan Air Quality Report, that blue skies are the barometer of good governance. And I think that's so true, right?
Yeah. Because it really shows you where sort of your government
is. It's true. I 100% agree with that. So this leads me to my next question. Why do you think it is just in a few months, right? So right now it's October to February. January. I realized that it would extend to February and now March as well. Why do you think it's just these months? And do you think that in the next couple of years, it will expand? Like it'll be more months that we'll see the smog?
The reason why October to February are quote unquote bad is because the smog is visible, right? It's not like pollutants go away. So I'll divide my answer into two parts. The reason why smog is visible from October to February is because of this phenomena called temperature inversion. Right, that takes place sort of the northern plains, which is where Delhi is, which is where Lahore is. And basically what happens is because of winter, and October to February is basically winter, right? Because of winter, your sort of warm air rises, your cool air sinks to the bottom. When it sinks to the bottom, it traps dust and dirt and pollutants, and that essentially turns into smog that we are then able to see, right? And because we're able to see it, it becomes something that rings alarm bells. You know, it's something that's scary, and it's very different from fog, right? It's very different from the fog that we used to previously associate with Lahore winters, because you could actually feel, you know, the smoggy, murky air within your lungs. But that is not to say that pollution does not exist, right? Once temperature inversion stops and the temperature rises, cold air is no longer trapping those particles. And so the extent to which the air is polluted, sure, that may reduce, but industrial sort of or vehicular pollutants are still very much in the atmosphere. So that's not to say that the air is less polluted, but you know, winter just makes it more evident.
Hmm. What are some of the impacts from exposure to this kind of air quality?
Sure. Okay, so the impacts are wide ranging, right? Ranging from, you know, lung disease, lung damage to heart disease. There are some studies that even gesture towards cancer. Something we were able to talk about in our story was the fact that there has certainly been a documented rise in COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, within cities like Lahore and Delhi and Dhaka. And some sort of pulmonologists we spoke to gestured towards this sort of new variant. And it's not so new. It's been around since around 2022, 2023. But this new variant of COPD called COPD-P, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder caused by pollution or caused by exposure to pollutants, and that the incidence of this is rising. And the important thing to bear in mind about COPD and all forms of COPD is that it's not reversible. It is progressive. And so it can potentially get worse because of prolonged exposure, but it can't be reversed. And that is, you know, that's pretty alarming. Bearing in mind the fact that, you know, levels of pollution in this region are.
Zuha, what were some of the key findings from your reporting and your colleagues' reporting on the impact of poor air quality on gig workers?
Right. So the 25 gig workers that we surveyed, all of them gestured towards the fact that they were feeling sick and exhausted, that they had been coughing. Several workers that we spoke with said that they also had fever as sort of winter months set in. A lot of them didn't really have the language to describe that, right? So they didn't really know whether it was pollution causing it or something else. But across the board, we saw people telling us that they felt exhausted, that they felt, you know, that they were experiencing irritation in their eyes as a result of exposure to pollutants while on the road. A lot of them are, so one of the workers that my school reporter spoke with in Delhi, he's also the worker that carried the monitor with us. He's a migrant worker from Bihar. And he said, you know, I'm contemplating moving back, right? Because the air quality here is so bad and I'm working on these streets day in and day out exposed to bad air quality. So I'd much rather leave and at least have a healthier life.
You know, I'm just trying to think of how depressing the situation might be. You've moved to another place to get more access, like, you know, to be able to make money, but because of how bad the environment is, how bad the air quality is, you're thinking of moving back. Like, it defeats the purpose, right? So you've mentioned all these gig workers and everything, and like the monitors, like in Delhi and Lahore. I was wondering, did you guys in your research, when you were talking about it, you know, while writing the story, did you see any significant differences in the experience of gig workers in Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh, or were they all similar?
They were all really similar, just in terms of fatigue and exhaustion, all similar experiences. And I think what was also really interesting about, so, I mean, we all know Lahore, and through the data that we gathered as well, Lahore sort of emerged as the most polluted. Delhi was a close second. Dhaka was sort of trailing behind, but also very quickly inching towards a similar level of pollution. But something very interesting that we noted was that the levels of PM2.5 exposure to the two workers in Delhi and Lahore both climbed to the 400s, round about the same mark in both cities, right? So 5:30 p.m. in Lahore and 6 p.m. Delhi, which is the same time because
yeah.
I have a 30-minute time.
30-minute difference, yeah.
Right. The levels of PM 2.5 exposure cross the 400 level mark. You know, so divided by a border, united
by. Bad air quality. Also, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was Delhi initially where the smog started off from, right? Or is that just a myth that happened? Because I thought Delhi had worse air quality than Lahore at one point. And then obviously Lahore snuck in and won the race.
I think that's a myth. I also think there's this really great book that I referenced in the in my piece. It's called The Great Smog of India. It's by a writer called Siddhartha. I forget his last name. But he basically talked about how, you know, cities like Delhi, but also Lahore for that matter, experience this thing called a meteorological misfortune, right? Because they're situated on plains. Delhi in particular surrounded by mountains.
Yeah.
The air quality simply, you know, it's almost like a bowl, like a toxic bowl that's filled with, a particulate matter that is hazardous for human health. And really, you know, the only way to prevent that from happening is to ensure that the sources of that particulate matter, you know, are sort of clamped down or reduced or so on and so forth. But I really don't see something that, and maybe this is tangential, but something that I realized through the course of reporting on this story is I don't think anything is going to happen, right, in terms of sort of government intervention. Like, I don't see it happening. Yeah.
Why though?
I don't see it happening because, you know, we're so dependent on, I mean, our public transport infrastructure is so dismal and so terrible. We're so dependent on cars for transport. And then when the government tries to do things like lockdowns, the gig worker in our piece actually said this. He said, you know, why are we having it? It doesn't make sense because there's actually more cars on the road during a lockdown, right? Because it's chutti and everyone's like, hey, let's go out and have dinner, or like, let's go to the park, or like, let's go for a drive. So it's actually counterintuitive and counterproductive to have a lockdown to prevent vehicular transport, you know, vehicular emissions. And it's also, I mean, priorities are misplaced, right? So one doesn't really, priorities are misplaced on the government and the platform level, I feel, right? Because after a certain point, it's like, okay, so what? You know, we're not going to shut down our industries. We're not going to move our industries to different areas because the cost of doing that is so high. And so, you know, we just live and breathe that toxic air.
Going back to the thing where you said that gig workers don't often have the language to express what they were going through. Can you talk to me a little about how did gig workers in these cities perceive and cope with the challenges that were posed by air pollution during their shifts?
Yeah, that's a tough question because when I was sort of trailing Sameer during his shift, it was actually really alarming for him to realize, because I think this was the first time he actually acknowledged the fact that he was breathing toxic air, because it was evident, because there was this tiny little device that was in his hand that kept blinking red, and an app on his phone and kept beeping every 15 minutes saying the air is hazardous, you know, go indoors. And kept showing a score of zero. And so at the end of the day, they don't really, or like workers like Sami at least, don't really have a choice because there are mouths to feed, right? If there was an alternative, what would that alternative be? To work indoors, but the jobs don't exist. Or like if they could work indoors, they wouldn't be gig workers to begin with, right?
It's sad reality, but yeah. My last closing question to you. Can you talk to me a little about any recommendations or interventions that you think could improve these conditions for gig workers in polluted environments? Did you see anything? Did you hear anything? Is there something that you would personally like to see changed?
There were some interventions, and I think we've also gestured to them in our reporting. A couple of years back, you know, being partnered up with this organization. I forget what, I think it was Sehat Online. They partnered up with an organization to give gig workers smog kits. These smog kits comprised of paracetamol and masks, which is like very basic.
Yeah.
But even that doesn't exist now, you know. And Kareem did not respond to our request for comment. Neither did Zomato, neither did Swiggy, neither did InDrive, neither did. But how, you know, so none of the platforms we reached out to commented, which really goes to show where this lies on the list of priorities, right? On their list of priorities. But yes, I mean, in terms of interventions, I think the time for Band-Aid interventions has long passed. And I think the only interventions possible now are, okay, like, you know, cars that have old engines that are emitting, you know, fumes need to go off the road. We need better forms of mobility and public transport so that the burden on vehicles is reduced. I mean, but these are really large scale interventions. And I think based off the data that we've gathered and what we've witnessed on ground, time for small scale interventions has long passed. And the only thing that is going to work now is something bigger along these lines. You know, I mean, what road sweeping is not an effective. Yeah.
You know, all I'm thinking about road sweeping is, you know, when I was in the newsroom, we would have this news every year after Bakra Eid, where they would actually show the KMC people sweeping the roads of Ofal. And it would be like, you know, we have to use this. So that's the only image I get. But thank you so much for this, Zoha. This was really great. My other guest today is Amira, an accomplished environmental engineer, climate change and development consultant. She's the senior manager, sustainability at NUST. Her dedication to driving positive change extends to her project, climate.org, that is CLIM-8.org, an innovative initiative focused on communication, science communication, in both English and Urdu. Through this project, Amira aims to empower fellow Pakistanis with knowledge about the impacts of climate change and practical solutions. Let's hear what Amira has to say. Amira, can you tell me a little about yourself? Like, what do you do?
Right. So, Tuba, I am the head of sustainability at NUST, and I have my own organization called climate.org, where I create content for climate communication in both English and Urdu. And I've previously also worked with UN Women and GIZ and as a consultant and at Save the Children. So I have a little bit of development sector experience, but mostly I've been a climate activist for about a decade now.
Okay, wow, that's pretty cool, Amira. Amira, so my first question to you is going to be very, very specific. What does breathing clean air mean to you?
Well, breathing clean air makes a lot of difference in one's life, but it's not something that you can really understand until you have the option to, you know, not breathe clean air.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very subtle differences. So the sky is a little less bright. Your pictures are a little more dull. Your ability to walk very far is a little low. So it's little things like that. So it's always going to be very subtle, and I feel like that's why we've been able to ignore this problem for so long.
Well, this brings me to my next question. What does high risk air quality mean specifically in the Pakistani context? And if you have had any experience with this, can you make it a little easier for the listeners to understand, like, what is high risk air quality?
So yeah, high risk basically means that all parts of your body are very affected by air pollution. When you breathe in polluted air, it sort of enters your bloodstream through your lungs. So it can affect anywhere, your heart, your lungs, your ability to breathe, and your brain and your bloodstream. So it literally affects every part of you. It can even cause things like depression and anxiety. It can cause high stress, apart from things like cardiovascular problems, such as, you know, bad heart health, even heart attacks in extreme cases. So it really depends on the kind of pollution that you're breathing in. And in Pakistan, that can mean anything since we have a lot of waste burning going around as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what high risk means.
That is a very, very bleak picture. Can you tell me what this air quality scale looks like?
So yeah, it's a scale from zero to around 300-ish. It can go as high as you want. So zero to 50 is generally good air quality, and up to 100, it's okay. When it hits 150, it can be unhealthy for people who have asthma. And when it hits 200, that's when it's unhealthy for mostly everyone. And anything above that just keeps on getting more and more hazardous over time.
Mm. If you compare Pakistan with other countries which have bad air quality, where would we stand? And can you give me like a comparison with some other countries?
So India and China are pretty much on par with Pakistan. We do have the worst air quality. Lahore does have the worst air quality in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I said, the scale that we were talking about earlier, anything over 200, if you're breathing that inconsistently, that's just as bad as, you know, anything else. And just keeps getting worse when the AQI gets worse. So India and China do also have regularly bad air quality reporting. And so they're right up there. So this seems to be a regional problem. But we are doing really, really bad in terms of air quality. It's embarrassing.
Yeah. Can you break it down for us? Like, why? Who is the biggest culprit in Pakistan for this poor air quality? What are the top three sectors, for example, that are contributing to this?
Right. So the biggest sector is transportation. And then you have smaller sectors like construction, crop burning, and waste burning, and things like that. But they do not compare to transportation at all. So transportation is the giant up here that we need to be looking out for. And the problem with transportation is not as much as, you know, that whether or not we have clean fuel. I mean, that is also a problem, but the biggest problem is access to transportation. Mm-hmm. So by that, I mean the option of having public transportation, because I read somewhere the other day that a successful nation is not one where poor people have started owning cars. It's where rich people travel on public transport. So we over here in Pakistan are more focused on giving cars to everybody and making sure that everybody has cars, and having more roads and, you know, clearing green areas for more roads. And, you know, these roads sit in construction for years on end. So
yeah,
that also serves as a source of air pollution, that construction process. So it's really about providing electric or not necessarily electric, just public transportation for everyone and a good public transportation network.
What can the government do to help us overcome this? Like, obviously, like, make public transport available and accessible to everyone. But what is something the government can do? For example, like, you know, for the Ministry of Petroleum, like, can they do something about people using dirty fuel? Can we have anything like that?
Right. So one of the goals of the clean air policy that Pakistan has is to implement better fuel quality standards.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, again, how are you going to implement that when fuel is already so expensive for people to afford? If you're providing the option to have cleaner fuel, but it's more expensive than regular fuel, nobody's going to really go for the cleaner fuel. And also, you can't really impose that on a country like Pakistan, where you've already suppressed the public so much, where it's so hard to survive. The solution really over here is to invest in public transportation and work with maybe donor agencies or other governments worldwide to have a public transportation system in Pakistan.
You know, the smog last year, that was the worst it's been from what I've been able to understand. What do you think the government of Pakistan can do to tackle this?
Really, Tuba, there's nothing that we can do apart from tackling the sources for air pollution. So again, the biggest one being transportation, we really do need to invest in that sector. But apart from that, maybe we could help farmers figure out ways to alternative to crop burning. We can maybe help curb waste burning. And so the National Clean Air Policy really lists down what sectors of the government or what government agencies would be responsible for each of these areas as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that policy really is, you know, comprehensive, as all policies in Pakistan are, but we really do need implementation on that.
Okay. So how do you counter, you know, when it's smog, like when people say it's winter, smog's supposed to be here in winter, it always happens. Like, what can you say to that? Like, how can you make people see that, you know, smog is not normal, guys? There's something bad happening here.
So you know, it doesn't have to happen. We sort of let it happen. And the analogy I would give here is that people smoke knowing that it's bad for them. They have these pictures of cancer, cancerous feet and mouths on the packs that people smoke. And yet that still does not deter them from smoking in general. So there's this quote by Allama Iqbal, right? Khuda ne aaj tak us qaum ki halat nahi badli na ho jisko khayal aap apni halat badalne ka. So I think that pretty much covers Pakistan because we don't really need to let this happen. We don't really need to have our kids be living like this, but it's kind of up to us to do that.
But we do. We're doing it. That's a really tough call, right? Because, you know, there's something you could do, you could have done, but you haven't done it. And it's reached a point where, I mean, I don't know, it is difficult to breathe, right? Anyway, talking about air quality in China, pollution levels are down by 42% over the last 10 years. This means that the Chinese people can now expect to live 2.2 years longer. How do they do this and what can Pakistan learn from this?
So I think their biggest changes were they introduced electric buses into the system. So again, public transportation. And they reduced their coal mines. They improved fuel quality. And they moved from coal to natural gas for heating and things like that. So it's pretty much very basic, basic solutions, things that we can all think of. Again, it's just about implementing them.
Can you tell me how the life of an average Pakistani can get better with better air quality?
My father and I suffer from a bunch of respiratory problems, including asthma. And whenever air quality gets bad, that's a point where we are not able to sleep at night. We're not able to function properly throughout the day. So I take more sick days. And our quality of work also decreases. So this happens for a lot of Pakistanis, for millions of Pakistanis across the country. Our functionality decreases. Our healthcare needs increase. We take more sick days, and we're not able to function as well as we would with good air quality. So it really, the overall economy might even have to take a hit because of bad air quality. But there haven't been enough statistics or studies done on this to quantify how much. So you might even feel more stressed or depressed when air quality is bad. And most of all, bad air quality threatens the development of children's brains. So an entire generation of Pakistan is now facing this issue where children's brains are being affected by particulate matter and other air pollutants, which are going in there and affecting their cognitive abilities, which means an entire generation is being affected by bad air quality and we're doing nothing about it.
That is scary. But thank you for that, Amira. This is a lovely conversation. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Climate Mahal. As you reflect on the implications of air pollution, let's remember the collective responsibility we all share in shaping a cleaner, healthier future for generations to come. Stay tuned with the Baad Labs Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, now X, and YouTube pages for more updates and future episodes. And remember, every action counts in the fight against air pollution.